over 90 public radio stations across the country, including WNYC and some of KHSU's local programs. Learn more at streamguys.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of EPIC, the Environmental Protection Information Center. The Eco News Report is brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Joining me in the studio is Matt Myers, safari guide, conservationist, bike rider, who is in town to raise awareness about rhino poaching in his home country of South Africa.
Yes, sir. Hi, Tom. How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for making the bike ride down here.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So, who the heck are you, and how'd you get into my studio?
Good question. So, I'm from South Africa. My name's Matt. I'm a safari guide, as you said. And yeah, we've been planning a conservation initiative for the last 18 months or so, and we're about 3 weeks in, just over 3 weeks in, started April 17th, where I'm cycling. I'm by no means a cyclist. I'm doing this because I have to. I was originally going to walk this. And so I'm pulling a life-size rhino behind me, a statue of an animal that I care dearly about. And I was tired of sitting back and letting it be someone else's problem to raise funds and awareness about the conservation of these animals. And so I'm now just over 800 miles in from the Canadian border, brought us to Humboldt State University, where you guys are here. Yeah, so we're here.
All right, well, welcome to the Redwood Coast. We have rhinos in the redwoods.
Yeah.
You know, I think North America used to have rhinos, the precursor,
yeah,
right?
I mean, like continental drift and shift and all of that. I think there was a hairy form of rhinos in North America maybe a long time ago.
Yeah, we had all sorts of interesting stuff. Giant sloth and camels. Now, no more. The biggest thing you'll see. Well, did you see the Roosevelt elk when you were?
We did see elk. We have seen elk, yes. They were a little bit. I tried to speak to one of them this morning while I was riding past, and they were just kind of running away seeing this rhino they haven't seen in quite some time.
Yeah, I imagine that's probably pretty scary if you're an elk.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so you are a rhino expert. So I have a little game for us. 10 facts about rhinos. Truth or false?
Okay.
All right. So number one, a crash is a group or aggregation of rhinos. True or false?
True.
That is correct. I wish I had a bell. I'm really underprepared for this.
Ding.
Ding. All right. Rhinos are fire adverse to the point that they will stomp out a campfire.
So true or false, that could be true or false. Rhinos have got poor eyesight. They have been known to put out campfires, but are they doing it to put the fire out? Who knows? I mean, no one's ever asked a rhino, but they have put them out. They could just be running at the light.
All right. I had that as a false, or at least there have been no verifiable accounts of this.
They have been known to put fires out.
But folk legend or whatever.
Yes.
So I'm gonna ding that as a correct answer. All right. So the lips of rhinos are prehensile, meaning that kind of like an elephant trunk, they can grasp or hold onto objects.
Of a black rhinoceros, yes, they are. That's true.
Is it not true of white?
Well, white rhinos have got very muscular lips.
White rhinos
have got the square mouth, and they don't actually bite the grass that they're eating. They pluck it with their lips.
Huh.
And so the black rhinoceros has a prehensile lip, yes.
Okay. So my true or false questions are not even necessarily all true. Great. Well, so I blame Wikipedia for all of this. We don't have rhinos. It's not a species I really work on. All right. So there are 5 species of rhinoceros.
That are still in existence? True.
All right. Do you want to have a caveat about recent genetic research concerning the northern white rhino subspecies?
So Sudan is actually, I don't know if you've seen, he's recently been added to Tinder.
That's one of my questions. All right, we'll get to that.
Okay, but yes, so the recent genetic research that's being done, or they're trying to do fundraising for, Olpegeta is actually one of our beneficiaries, which are they're the guys in connection with an organization over here in the States. They're going to be doing like a frozen zoo where they're going to try and harvest genetics and genes freeze them until they can figure out what they can do with them to bring back a species. Because as we stand now, the subspecies, the northern white rhino, are extinct, essentially. There are three of them left, but they're not a viable genetic population because it's Sudan and then his two daughters, essentially. So
goodness.
They cannot breed.
All right. Well, so you've hit my next two true or false questions, but let's just pretend that you haven't.
Yeah.
So there are three northern white rhinos left.
True.
All right. And bonus if you can remember their names. So it's Sudan.
I know Sudan. I don't know what his daughter's names are.
And I didn't write those down either. So. All right. So you are from South Africa. This is not true or false.
Oh, I was about to say true. Do I get that? Do I get
you
points
do.
For
okay.
That?
Points. What species do you have in South Africa?
We have the white and then the black rhino.
Okay.
But then there's also kind of a desert-adapted black rhino that's in southern Africa and mainly in Namibia, but also found up in northwestern South Africa in the Northern Cape. And those are specifically adapted to living in desert environments. So environments where there's less water, they're just much better at retaining water.
All right. So, and this, I think, probably gets to why we're all here today. And this is probably a gimme, but rhinoceroses of all varieties and subspecies are the most endangered large mammal in the world. True or false?
I don't know. I'm actually.
Well, Wikipedia said that was true. So.
Yeah. So, I was just thinking, if you look at, because I mean, you've got the Javan rhino, which and they're less than 100 left.
Yeah.
And then the Sumatran less than 500. You've got the great one-horned rhino between Nepal and India. They're about 3,000 or 4,000, and then the black rhino 5,000 or 6,000, to the white rhino that are about 20,000. So, just as if you say rhinos, yes, that's true.
All right. All right, so this is why we're here today. So why are rhinoceroses, in particular, our African varieties, why are they in such bad shape?
So rhinos have historically been hunted and killed for their horn. It's etched quite far in ancient Eastern traditions to have medicinal properties. And in the sort of Middle Eastern countries, they've used them ornamentally for dagger handles, for carvings of sort of great notoriety. But now it's taken on more of a status symbol. With the rhino horn being so highly valued, I mean, you're looking at between $60,000 and $70,000 a kilogram, or $80,000 a kilogram, you're looking at like $30,000-$35,000 a pound for rhino horn. It's, you go to someone's home and they've got a rhino horn, it's, oh, that person must have a lot of money if they can afford something like that. Because, I mean, your average rhino horn, you're looking at, I don't know, 5-10 kilograms a horn. That's a lot of money that's sitting in that bit of keratin. So they're being poached for that, and it's something that, I mean, it can grow back. A rhino's horn can be harvested. It's not necessary to say that's a good thing. But, I mean, the only thing that needs a rhino's horn is a rhino.
And what does a rhino need its horn for?
Females use it to protect their calves. When the calf reaches a certain age and they're coming back into their next estrous cycle, bulls will smell that and they can become a little bit more pushy and can get in between the mother and her calf, and they can harm them. So the cow uses that to fend them off. But then also bulls will use them to fight for territorial display and for dominance.
And so you mentioned keratin.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what rhino horns are made of. Can you talk about what is that substance?
So it's much like our fingernails and our hair. So it's more compounded than hair, like our fingernails, and it's compressed. So it has a growth plate at the very bottom, which it grows from, and it wears off over time. So it's continually growing, continually wearing off. I mean, one of the programs that they've done is to microchip rhino horns so that they can track their movement. And it's something that they've got to do every couple of years, because the horn, if they embed it at the very bottom of the horn, it'll grow all the way to the top and then it falls out. And then they've got to do it again and again and again. So it's something that's continually growing. So a big bull rhino can have his horn cut off and then it'll grow back within a couple of years.
And so, like, and just to make this perfectly clear, just like our fingernails and our hair, there is not some sort of magical, spiritual, whatever,
absolutely
medicinal
not
value to this.
It has scientifically, nothing has been proven that the rhino horn can cure or that it does anything for. It's a mythological thing that, like I said, it's etched way back in ancient traditions that there's no scientific proof that it does anything that it's stated to do. It's a placebo. It's a mind thing.
So it's illegal. And it's very clear that the trade in parts of endangered species is outlawed by international law, and it's also outlawed by various state laws. China, for example, has laws that ban the sale of this. So what if it's outlawed, what's the issue? How does it continue to get on the market?
Well, I mean, there's a huge black market for it. We're sitting with the shot and killed in African countries. They're smuggled across borders, and they're paid bribed officials to get them across into China, into Vietnam. And yeah, I mean, it's it's like the drug trade. It is illegal, but it's still there. And so to get rid of something like that is obviously the ultimate goal. But it's to try and stop them from being poached, first off. China they have promised that they will have ivory illegal by the end of this year, and that could start the ball rolling with them to clamp down a little bit more on rhino horn, because it is illegal now. The only country in the world that you can legally trade rhino horn is within the boundaries of South Africa,
mm-hmm.
which was a law that was passed a couple of weeks ago. But you can't trade it internationally. It's still illegal to trade internationally.
Well, so that's interesting that a new law passed in South Africa. What's the purpose behind that?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer. I don't. It's something that's happened since the start of this project. And it's, you can apply for a permit to take, I think it's a maximum of 2 rhino horn per person internationally. So you can take them out of the country. You can buy them in the country, but you can't sell them once you leave South Africa. So it's the loophole that they are. I mean, some people want to sell rhino horns to protect rhinos. Other people want to sell rhino horn to make money. And where do you draw the line?
It is a tricky ethical conundrum, and there's a lot of those when it comes to the dealing of endangered species.
Yeah. The thing with rhinos is that separates them is if you, let's say, tiger bones or elephant ivory or pangolin scales or, I don't know, anything really. With the movement of exotic and endangered species and body parts of those, every animal in that spectrum has to be dead for that to happen. With the exception of rhinos, that's where that trickiness
mm-hmm.
is exacerbated. That's where it makes it that much more difficult to choose. Okay, rhinos, where do we draw the line? Because for you to have a tusk of an elephant has to have died.
Mm-hmm.
For you to have the skin of a tiger has to have died. For you to have the skull and bones of a lion, that lion has to be dead. But for you to have the horn of a rhino, it could still be sitting nice, peacefully, in a wild environment. So long as all rhinos in that environment have their horns removed, they can live okay. They can live peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, where do you draw the line then?
So there's been some work to discourage the poaching of rhinos, and one of these has included substances to dye and to add chemicals to make people sick if they were to ingest.
Yeah.
Rhino horns. What are your feelings on these types of conservation work?
I mean, if someone really wants a rhino horn, they don't care. They're not going to care if it's red or pink
mm-hmm.
or anything like that, because it's still illegal. A few years ago, there was actually I forget which country the gentleman came from, but it was an eastern country. He was a diplomat of that country, and he died of cyanide poisoning, because they had injected the rhino's horn with cyanide. But if you're just having it on display, it doesn't matter what color or substance is in it. It's when it comes to ingestion of it. If it works, great. But it's only in certain very small populations that they've tried this on. And for the greater scheme of things, the biggest white rhino poaching that's occurring is in one park in South Africa, in the Kruger Park. and that's where, I don't know, more than half of the rhinos are being poached. So to get a grasp and a grip on that population is, that's where it's proving to be more tricky, because it's also, that's where it's government involvement. That's where there's a lot of bribery and corruption and backhanded dealings where pay someone the right amount of money, they turn a blind eye to it. The private sector is most likely where this war is going to be won on, and that's why the organizations that we are funding, all three of them, are on the private sector.
All right, yeah, and that's a wonderful segue. But first, you are listening to the Eco News Report. I'm your host, Tom Wheeler, and I'm speaking with Matt Myers about poaching and conservation of rhinos. So you are writing. You're writing all the way down from Canada to Mexico, and you're writing to benefit three organizations. Let's give shout-outs to these organizations and tell us about what they do.
So Care for Wild Rhino Sanctuary, that was the, I wouldn't say the one I selected, but certainly one that I've done work with in South Africa. They are a rhino orphanage rehabilitation and release center in South Africa. They take orphaned rhino calves that whose mothers have been poached, or any animal, it doesn't necessarily have to be a rhino that's with its mother still, and they rehabilitate them. They bring them back to health. Often these calves, I mean, they just took in one within the last 72 hours, within the last 4 or 5 days. Sorry, not 72 hours. And these calves often come in extremely dehydrated, very stressed. Some of them don't make it, but the ones that do, it's a long, lengthy process of rehabilitating them, bringing them back to health. And then they have a surrogacy program that they have wild rhinos. So rhinos that have had very little interaction with humans, that they then pair them off with to teach them how to be wild rhinos, to be rhinos again. And then they reintroduce them and release them back into the wild. But in the wild, they're still in a reserve that are controlled and monitored 24 hours by anti-poaching units with dogs, security guards on horseback. So they're armed guards with them 24 hours a day. And that's in South Africa. And then the Save the Rhino Trust in Namibia, they monitor and protect the largest free-roaming black rhino population left in Africa, up in the northwestern parts of Namibia in the Kunene region. So the other guy who planned this whole project with me, and one of the sponsors, Piper and Heath Travel, Chris Liebenberg, he's from Namibia. He lives in San Diego, and that was an initiative that's close to his heart. And then the third and final one is Old Pejeta in Kenya, and we're supporting them. They've got both black and white rhino, and they are looking to expand because their black rhino population is doing so well. It's a great initiative. They've got good support, good ground staff, and they're looking at expanding their property in the foreseeable future. So that is a project that we are hopefully going to be backing and getting behind.
And so you mentioned this, but I think that this is a really funny story. Old Pejeta, they have teamed up with Twitter in 2017.
With Tinder.
Yeah. So the dating app where you judge people based on their looks.
Yeah.
So our good friend Sudan, the last northern male, northern white rhino, if you swipe right on his face, you will give a donation to the Conservancy to help in their efforts to protect rhinos. So if you see what looks like a rhino, it's not just some dude who is ashen with a big nose.
I have it here, so I can read out. His name is Sudan. His Tinder profile picture, it's a picture of him.
It's a pretty attractive photo. I would swipe right.
Yeah. And it's on the photograph says, this is the last living male northern white rhino. Swipe right to match him, to help him find a match. And then his profile explanation, whatever you want to call it, he says, I'm one of a kind. No, seriously, I'm the last male white rhino on planet Earth. I don't mean to be forward, but the fate of the species literally depends on us getting together. I like to eat grass and chill in the mud. No problems performing under pressure. 6 feet tall and 5,000 pounds, if that matters. So they teamed up together to raise funds for the genetic experiments and research they were going to be doing to try and preserve the last of the northern white rhino genes.
So I read a little bit about this online today. They have over a dozen individuals, mm-hmm. the genes from a dozen individuals that they're hoping that they're going to be able to use to restart the population,
yeah.
Which is just really fascinating and a cool use of our technology. This is something,
yeah.
right?
It's amazing.
It happened five years earlier. Who knows? No, where we would have been.
They really are learning some valuable stuff with rhinos. Some of the rhinos that have been poached, they're doing autopsies, finding out with skull reconstruction what chemicals and what substances we can use to help them. The calves that we're bottle feeding with different formulas of milk. We certainly are making great progress and leaps and bounds in the last couple of years with preservation of them scientifically, not just, okay, here's a rhino, feed it a bottle of some milk and try and bring it back, all the way through to, like you said, genetic research on how we can bring them back with just their genes by using surrogates of southern white rhinos and just putting the genes in the right place, the right time, timing it with generations, and hopefully in 4 or 5 generations of breeding specifically, we can have another viable population of northern whites.
That'd be amazing.
Yep.
So let's go back and think about the black market some. Our listeners always want to know what they can do. What can the United States government do to help our rhinos, to help stop the black market, to help stop the dealing of endangered species and their parts?
So obviously the first and foremost thing is don't buy a product of rhino horn. Don't buy anything that has rhino horn. Something small that can be done, not just for the African species, but for certainly the eastern species, the Sumatran, Javan, and greater one-horned, is just the products that you do buy, make sure you know where they come from. They are dying through habitat loss. That's where you've got the palm oil industry and conflict palm oil. But then if you look at the African species, it's just educating people, knowing where things come from. What you do on a daily basis has an impact on halfway around the world. But with the African animals, you're looking at just awareness, knowing that. I mean, the second largest, you've got obviously the East, China, Vietnam. That's where the rhino horn is going. But it's moving through other places. And the second biggest mover of, besides African countries, moving it to China, but the second biggest is here on the West Coast. Your three biggest Eastern populations outside of the Eastern Hemisphere sit on the West Coast of North America. In your LA, San Francisco, and Vancouver. And I mean, it was, I think, 2 months ago, there was an art dealer in LA who was, he's now on trial for the selling of illegal rhino horn. I mean, I think he had about 16 or 17 horns under his possession, moving them for money. I mean, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, the black market of rhino horn trade. And so it's being aware. It's figuring it out before it's too late. And then every bit helps. $1, $5, whatever donations can be made to the organizations that are protecting them. And with this project, we are fortunate in the sponsors that we have, Wilderness Safaris and Piper and Heath Travel. They are the two of them covering the hard costs of the project. We also have gear sponsors, Zoic and Showers Pass, and then nutritional sponsors, True Nutrition, who have allowed me to be on the road, kitted, kept going, kept healthy and strong, and Xoris have given us some camera gear. And through all of that, we are able to say that 100% of the proceeds from this go back to the rhino organizations that we're supporting. So I'm not taking a salary from this. I'm taking time off of work to be doing this project, and no one's making money off of this. So everything raised goes back.
So you've titled your ride The Long Ride to Save Them All. Can you explain the inspiration behind that title?
So it's the long ride to free them. Which was, yeah. So it's now just, it's Rhino Ride.
Okay.
For simplicity's sake. But the long ride to free them was inspired. It was originally going to be a walk.
Mm-hmm.
So it was going to be called the Long Walk to Free Them. I mean, that was kind of, by no means am I comparing myself to the late Nelson Mandela. But his journey through and his struggle to end the apartheid, the suppression of his people, and his autobiography was titled The Long Walk to Freedom. And so this is my tribute, essentially, to that epic journey of his by being the long ride to free them. So to free them from almost being on the brink of extinction and to stop the slaughter.
All right. So if folks are interested in learning more about rhino conservation, about the long ride to free them, or Rhino Ride as it's now called, where can they find out information?
So if you go to rhinoride.org, you can go on there, you can learn about the organizations that we're supporting, a little bit about the sponsors, the cause, and there is an opportunity to donate there. There's also Rhino Ride 2017 on all of the social media handles, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, where you can learn a little bit. You can learn a little bit about, we have fun rhino facts, we have a daily what's my snack kind of thing, and yeah, just follow the journey. There's an interactive map on the website Ride Along online, and then there are also prizes and auctions for safaris, and all proceeds go to the three organizations.
All right, well, you're heading down 101, mm-hmm. leaving from here. Are you going to stay 101 the whole rest of the way, or 101 and one?
Pretty much the 101,
uh-huh.
The one where it goes from Leggett towards the coast. That's a little bit too windy and hilly,
yeah,
to do so safely. So we're going to stick on the 101, go all the way through Sebastopol, Santa Rosa, into San Francisco, going across the Golden Gate Bridge on the 20th, so next Saturday morning. And then we'll spend a couple of days in San Francisco and then head down the one to Santa Cruz and then Monterey Bay and then back on the 101 all the way down to LA and San Diego.
All right. Well, so if you see somebody riding a bike and it looks like they're getting chased by a rhino, do not fear. It's just Matt.
Yeah.
It's the Rhino Ride. Well, thank you, Matt, for being on the Eco News Report.
And thank you for having us.
All right. Well, this has been the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I've been your host for the past half hour. I was just speaking with Matt Myers about rhino poaching, conservation, and his 2,000-plus-mile bike ride to raise awareness about rhino issues. Thank you for joining me again. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call our listener comment line at 826-6089. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the archive programs page at khsu.org. Previous shows are also posted on the North Coast Environmental Center's website at yournec.org. You can also subscribe to the Eco News Report on iTunes for your on-the-go listening pleasure. The Eco News Report is produced at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks, as always, to Fred for engineering. Join us again next week right here for the Eco News Report.
Today's day sponsors are Ed and Bunny Subkiss of Sarasota, Florida, welcoming Peter Fretwell to KHSU and wishing him enjoyment and success as the new KHSU general manager. You are listening to KHSU and KHSU HD, 90.5 Arcata, KHSR, 91.9 Crescent City, and KHSG, 89.9 Garberville. Support for KHSU comes from Wildberries Marketplace, a place to dream up a farm-to-table meal. The produce department sources its vegetables from a variety of local farms and growers to create a farmer's market within a market feel. Wildberries Marketplace, a farm-fresh produce supermarket of choice.
Fiona Ritchie along with you for another hour of great music here on the Thistle and Shamrock. Welcome.